Hi, this is Tony Ruggiero here on The Tour Coach. First of all, I want to thank all of you for listening and supporting The Tour Coach over the past several seasons. It's been a fun ride, and we've got some great stuff going on. Many of you may have seen the launch and the first little pilot episode of Pro Work that we've done in partnership with Bushnell Golf. That's the first in the series. It's been one of my ambitions, one of my kind of like projects and dreams for the past couple years, to film an inside, authentic, behind-the-scenes look at how myself and the team of great coaches, teachers, fitness experts, and mental coaches all work together. At first, it was just with tour players, but now I want to show you how we work together. The Colby Touyes, the Dr. Greg Cartons, the Mark Hacketts, Morgan Hales, Jackson Courts, Dr. Scott Lenz, Dan Terleski, all of us at Old Palm and at our retreats work together to help golfers of all skill level, and for it to be a real authentic, a real behind-the-scenes look, unedited, where you kind of see some of our discussions and some of the fun that we have. And so to kick this series off, we're starting a contest, okay? And that contest is going to be a social media contest for a Dew Sweeper Tour Coach giveaway. We're going to do the drawing the Monday after Augusta. We're going to draw one lucky winner. The winner is going to receive one free trip to come see me and our team at one of our retreats, okay? So you're going to get a free entry to our retreat with a brand new Bushnell Pro XE rangefinder, plus three custom fit Cleveland golf wedges, and it wouldn't be a Dew Sweeper Tour Coach giveaway without some Vineyard Vines Dew Sweepers gear. So here's how you enter a chance to win this fantastic opportunity to travel to come see us for a retreat with a Bushnell Pro XE rangefinder, new Cleveland wedges, and a Vineyard Vines Dew Sweepers gear. It's simple. All you got to do is go on your social media. So go to social media, go to Instagram, and post a screenshot of your favorite Tour Coach episode, okay? Tag me at the Dew Sweeper, tag at Bushnell Golf, and tag at Cleveland Golf, okay? Hashtag Pro Work, hashtag Tour Coach, okay? I hope you're the lucky winner. If you go to Twitter, it's at Dew Sweeper Golf, at Cleveland Golf, at Bushnell Golf, hashtag Pro Work, hashtag Tour Coach. So wherever you are, whatever social media you use, tag me, Bushnell, Cleveland Golf, and hashtag Pro Work, hashtag Tour Coach for an opportunity to win, once again, a retreat entry to come see me, work with me and my team at one of our famous retreats, plus a brand new Bushnell Pro XE, along with custom fit three Cleveland Golf wedges for you and your game, and some Dew Sweepers Vineyard Vine gear. We're going to do the drawing the Monday after the Masters. Hope all of you enjoy this edition of the Tour Coach, along with some of the upcoming episodes. We've got some fantastic guests, some fantastic insight behind the scenes. But I promise you, check out our social media. Go to Bushnell Golf on YouTube. Find the first edition of Pro Work. Take a listen. Take a look. Tell me what you think. There's more inside, authentic, behind-the-scenes looks at our instruction team, and so there'll be some plenty of laughs as well, I promise you. So once again, this is Tony Ruggiero. I hope you enjoy listening to the Tour Coach. Hope you've enjoyed watching Pro Work. Take advantage of this opportunity. Once again, go on Instagram, take a screenshot of your favorite Tour Coach episode or the one you're listening to, and tag me at the Dew Sweeper, at Bushnell Golf, at Cleveland Golf, hashtag Pro Work, hashtag Tour Coach. Hopefully you're the lucky winner. Enjoy this edition of the Tour Coach, and hopefully we'll see you soon on the Lesson Tee.
All right, so I'm kind of pumped about this. Joining me here on the Tour Coach is somebody who has played the tour, and he has recently, over the past year, become one of my favorite Twitter follows. That's how this all came about. Former PGA Tour player from out in Washington, the state of Washington, Rick Fair. Rick, how you doing, bud? And thanks so much for sitting in with me. I've been looking forward to doing this.
Oh, likewise. I enjoy listening to you and all the guests you have on. I think we all learn collectively from each other. And I know I'm a little bit remote out here, but this is home. And yeah, there's still coaches out in the Great Northwest as well.
Well, that's one of the beauty of things, you know, is like nowadays is you can connect with people, you know, and watch stuff that they do. And you know, I'm always fascinated. I'm fortunate to, you know, work with some guys that can play pretty good. I always like picking players' brains. I feel like I've learned I was very fortunate and had a great base, like where I learned from some great teachers. But like some of the stuff I've really learned the most has been picking the brains of folks that just were great players, you know, and I just wanted to spend 30, 40 minutes picking your brain and because you were such a really good player and had success, won on tour a few times. Like, first of all, let's start, like, what was your instruction base as a young person coming up? Like, you know, what kind of instruction did you have? And let's talk about how you've watched instruction change over the years.
Well, yeah. So, obviously, it's different for all of us. I mean, I was learning to play the game in the 1970s, okay? So, everybody can do the math. You know, it's been a while. So, I was very fortunate. I was introduced to the game through my father, who was a good player. But he realized he wasn't going to teach me how to play. So he just, the head golf pro at the course I grew up at, Sand Point Country Club in Seattle, and Ron Hagen, his job was, you know, traditional PGA pro, run the shop, get ready for the member guests, the whole thing. And you know, they wore all the capes of Superman. And what I recall, and I'm sure Ron would explain that he did more than this, so I don't want to minimize his influence, but basically showed me how to hold the golf club. And this is back in the, hey, toe up to toe up phase, you know, so, you know, right. And it's very different. Popular opinion now is that's no good. But anyway, I played a lot of golf. I was fortunate. I caddied. I some days played 36 holes. We didn't really have a driving range. I'd hit balls out between the fourth and fifth holes in the evening and go collect them and bring them back. And all that stuff, I look back and I realize most of that's really magical. And I wish more kids had the opportunity to play a lot of golf and hit their own shag bag, go collect them. You pay attention to where you're hitting them because you got to go find them. Anyway, I just think all that played in, and I had some early success, pretty much immediate, and started winning some golf tournaments, and off I went. So my instruction base was not a lot, and here I am now a full-time coach, and so... Yeah, I love creating self-sufficiency with the folks I work with. You know, let's get them learning cause and effect and what makes them great at an early stage. And, you know, and if I'm become a hands-off kind of here if needed type coach, that's kind of my preference.
I love that. I think, you know, I've tried to be big on creating self-reliance for my players. And I think that the tour coach, like out there on tour, was created for people as a business model, not whether it's really good for the player. You know, like you're coming up with a reason to charge them a percentage or to be out there, and then you pick up more players because you're out there all the time. I don't know that necessarily. I'd love your thoughts as a player, and I know that it does help some players, but I think in general, I'm not sure that is actually better for the player and how they perform.
Man, you're leading me into some dangerous waters there, Tony.
Piss people off all the time.
No, and I'll be straight up. I think they're absolutely some of the most brilliant coaches in the world are, you know, working with players out there. And that's not the space I'm working in presently. And so I'd be very careful about how I put it. But it's like, my gosh, Tony, you and I both know how hard it is for – how good you got to be to get on tour, right? I mean, just somebody's got a tour card, whether it's conditional or whatever. Like, you know how to play the damn game, right? And you've had success. So I just feel like, you know, my approach would be very, very careful. You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, you know, what is the – if that player really needs to step their game up, I mean, that's why, you know, I'm not a swing coach, so to speak, but I know the golf swing. I feel like you've got, you and I could create quite a list of all the different things that contribute to performance, you know, and good scoring. And it's a long, long list. And I mean, my gosh, sometimes I feel like I spend too much time learning because I got to go do some doing, but it's because I recognize that, my gosh, I mean, if I don't know what that player's mindset is, how the heck would I know where the bad shot came from, you know? And, you know, swing looks the same to me, both of them. and yet one of them's 30 yards left out of play, and the other one's down the middle. And I just think that, right, there's so many different things. And I think, yeah, being a tour coach, so to speak, whatever the heck that means. I was a tour player, and now I'm a coach. I don't know, maybe I'm a tour coach, whatever the heck that means, that it's good marketing. My gosh, you know? I mean, I know, if I'm working with three tour players, I got them lined up till, you know, September on my lesson book, right? So it's I understand it, and absolutely no critical thought or feeling for me towards anybody that has chosen that path. And we're looking at the success of Scotty Scheffler, and Randy Smith humbly, you know, recognizes, hey, location, location, location. He's got a lot of, you know, motivated, talented kids coming through his system. But I think it's a fine art, and there's excellent tour coaches that can take a really good player and help them to the next level. And I think that's, that's a brain surgeon, right? But man, it's really easy to screw somebody up. I kind of coach with that fear in the back of my mind, is like, I do not want to do any harm. So it keeps me on my toes, keeps me learning. Yeah.
I love that. I had a great teacher one time tell me that one of my best attributes was that I hadn't screwed anybody up yet. Right. Yeah. And like I've always said, like I've had some guys I've taught, like, you know, I spent some time with Bill Haas where I really didn't do a very good job. Like I didn't get done what I wanted done. Right. Like I didn't get him back to play good, but I didn't ruin him either. I think when you're teaching players that are that, I'd love your opinion on this. When you're teaching people at that level, man, it's tricky to not make them work, ruin them. Like, it's hard sometimes, because they're already so dang good.
Right. Yeah, so it's going to lead me, I know nobody out there wants Rick talking about Rick, but it's super relevant here that,
yeah.
So I won pretty much everything growing up, okay? And when I just blew through and, all the local junior tournaments, won national junior tournament, coaches are recruiting me, go off. Great college career, All-American, play Walker Cup, Lo-Am, and the Masters U.S. Open in 1983 or whatever it was. And just, right, so it's like, okay, tracking. Still haven't had any more instruction than what I described earlier. and I get on tour and early success, win in my first full season. And, I know most people don't know this because I'm so damn old, they don't remember or weren't around. But anyway, so I had that pedigree, so to speak.
Right,
and then
right.
I hit, right, and then all of a sudden I hit my first extended slump, let's call it. Like, I hadn't really played that bad for 3 or 4 months in a row. So now I'm looking for answers, right? And so, sure enough, a buddy of mine refers me to, hey, you got to see so-and-so, and I'm not going to use names or anything. People start figuring it out. But somebody that worked with tour players. And I always played from kind of the DJ-ish, Morikawa-ish wrist position at the top. And when a good player like I was, or you take a real good tour player today, and they start playing bad, and you know this, they're super vulnerable at that point, right? So I'm not saying they're going to listen to anything, but if somebody with a reputation suggests something, they're probably inclined to give it a go. And I did that.
They will listen to anything. They're desperate.
And it's interesting, right? Because you take them at their peak, and when they're playing great, it's like, Your attitude is, get the heck out of my way. I'm going to beat your butt. I'm going to beat your butt with my bowed left wrist or whatever. My flexion is going to wear you out. But instead, I was convinced that, hey, let's fix that backswing. Let's get that wrist position dead flat at the top. Done. I spent 5 months working as hard as I've ever worked. Got it there. Looked like Ben Hogan in my backswing and position at the top. I never hit the ball good again. So all I'm saying is, right, yeah. So I knew how to scrap and claw and play and tremendous short game and putting. And, I had little streaks of hitting it good. And when I hit it good, boy, I rang the bell and cashed out. But all that to say is that, it's not about making a coach look bad for doing that. I mean, I hired him, He's the consultant. I'm the CEO.
Right.
I hired him. But all the point is, it certainly has affected the way I approach golfers, and especially good players. And that whole do no harm thing, you know, I'm just afraid that there's probably too many swing coaches that kind of are stuck on whatever, you know, their preferences. And like you and I can both find a file of people that, you know, get the club head behind the hands and the takeaway that won major championships, you know. So it's right. Like, I just feel like when somebody gets to that level, we're going to approach it differently than a 13-year-old kid that, you know, wants to play D1 college golf. And it's like, well, now would be the time to build something in.
So that brings me to the point. Like, I tell folks all the time, and I work with a kid, plays at Georgia Southern, Ben Carr. He's in the Masters. He lost mm-hmm. the finals at the U.S. Amateur. And he's got a really strong grip, right? And when mm-hmm. he came to me, you know, he didn't want to change it, and I didn't change it. He was already a good player. Been working three, mm-hmm. 4 years. But I said to somebody the other day, like, that's totally different. I would have changed the grip then, because, like, he had plenty of time to learn. But then, you know, and he's 20, it's a different animal, because he'd already won a bunch of stuff and was good. But, like, I liked what you just said. Like, I think that, you know, I get that there's lots of different matchups, and there's the DJs of the world, and there's the Morikawas, mm-hmm. all these different grips and faces. But, like, to me, really good grips and square faces for 12- and 13-year-olds don't really go out of style if you get the opportunity to work with them, you know?
Yeah, you mentioned DJ. There was, back in the days, if it's been a while, you and I may remember, but maybe some of the listeners don't, but David Faherty, before he had kind of his whimsical sort of Golf Channel programming, he had basically an in-studio thing where he had guests, and he had the Harmon brothers in there. Harmon brothers. And at one point in the conversation, Butch was talking about, he says, yeah, along the lines, I just started working with DJ, and we sat down. He said, the first thing I told him, he says, you know that wrist position at the top? I want you to know now, you can relax, I'm not changing it. You know, so that got my attention, right? Because I was sort of in that space, and then I heard Butch later on say, "Hey, you know what? There's nothing no problem with that. It's just that every good player that's been there has predominantly played a fade," and I just went, it just hit me, and I entered depression, because that's all I needed to hear. That's all I needed to hear. Back in the day, as I was still kind of playing a draw, and every now and then I'd get the ball get away from me a little bit left and then hit a block, kind of the two-way miss. And so, you know, I'm not claiming that Butch is the greatest of all time, but I would just say that, boy.
I think he is. I think he's my favorite.
I sure as heck wish I had hired him, you know, because it had been, honestly, it had been a 30-minute conversation, I'd been fine, you know, and instead I spent months and months and got worse. So there's the wisdom of experience, right? I'm not saying that a young 32-year-old, you know, golf coach can't do the same thing. There's brilliant dudes out there that are, and gals that are figuring it out. But it's just like, I think there's, sometimes we need to set aside kind of our program and our plan and kind of do what's best for the player.
So let's talk about, like, so you retired from playing professionally, you know, how did you morph into, how did you say, hey, I'm going to start teaching? Did it happen right away? What drew you to the teaching side?
Yeah, I had to get to work right away, Tony. It's like I played in a different era. Last place money at the Players is more than my first winner's check. So it was, you know, it was a different era. So it was sort of back in the day. We're talking about 2002, 2003. I think I'm a pretty smart guy, and I could do a number of different things, but it's like, well, you know, I can do this. And so I, you know, and right. And so I, finally found a facility that would have me and you know, got going, you know, just started teaching. And I, of course, like all of us, we look back and realize how little we knew and how unqualified we were. But I quickly, this is 20 years ago. So I didn't just start doing this. And I kind of took on, you know, instruction and coaching the same way I took on playing. It's like, I took it really serious. I wanted to be really good at what I did, and sort of felt even a greater responsibility because it's other people's money and other people's golf games. And, you know, if I screw up myself, that's one thing. But if you screw up a paying customer, you know, for me, I feel worse. So anyway, I've been on a journey for a long time now. I haven't coached and taught that whole time. I was a sports agent for 7 or 8 years, and I mean, I've got a wild resume, but I'm thinking back in probably about 7 or 8 years ago, I kind of came back in aggressively, like I want to be really good at what I do, and so done everything I need to continuing to learn, but studying and certifications, which come and go, but I just I'm in a context where I'm not a specialist, I'm a kind of a head coach generalist, and I want to mm-hmm. have broad enough understanding to see how the pieces work together, and then I'm the first guy to hire a specialist when needed. Say, hey, we're now I'm not the TPI golf fitness guy. I'm not the I went through Cheatham and Sasho's program, but I'm not a biomechanist, and so there may be a time where I need to send somebody down to Michael Neff at Gears or whatever else, right? But I do feel like probably a strength I have is that I can sit back and I see how all the pieces come together, and I think I've got the human skills where people will share, and I'll know if, oh gosh, it's a college kid with parent problems or a junior, right? I mean, we got to know where the problem lies. So you do it all the time, but I love it. I love it. Obviously, you and I are in it because we love helping people, and I feel like I'm highly capable of doing that.
Yeah. So talk about specialists. That mm-hmm. that role's changed a bunch since you played, right? I mean, like there were. Yeah. Guys weren't big into the fitness side, when you were playing. I mean, I'm sure there were obviously a few, but not like, I mean, to me, one of the big changes is like, I'm about to be 52, is like, there's just more and more and more really good athletes playing golf now.
Absolutely. Yeah. 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 And it's sort of a heartbreaker, isn't it, when you get when you're working with a kid that has these dreams and aspirations, like, my gosh, this young man's not going to get past 5'6" whatever, right? And there's speed training, and Rory's kind of a he's a freak at his size, but he's got a loading pattern that's maxed out, and he works out a ton, and so it's not an impossibility, but you're fighting heavyweights, and so that has changed, and better athletes, 100%. I do observe. I mean, I work with junior golfers and do my best to get to tournaments and watch them play and all this stuff, and I'm kind of blown away today at how many of these kids are up there in the 120 mile per hour club head speed range. They're shooting 86. It's like, I mean, like, what the heck's going on here? The rest of the stuff still matters, folks. You got to control path and face and the whole thing. But, it's different. And it's, I mean, to get to where I got, which would be PGA Tour and having success out there, it is a heck of a lot more difficult. No question about it.
Yeah, I had a kid this morning, actually, a good player, plays college. And he could hammer it. Mm-hmm. Stats. He said he's terrible with his iron game, right? His approach game. Mm-hmm. And I was like, he has, he swings everything the same speed. So I was like, mm-hmm. what do you do when it's not a full 7-iron?
Mm-hmm.
And he never practices like, we'll hit this 178 instead of 185 or whatever. Like, I just made him for an hour try to hit things specific distances.
Awesome.
And he was like, afterwards, he was like, oh man, that was different. I was like, but, like, I think that's a big part of coaching, don't you? Because, like, they don't make – when you go on the course, it's not your 7-iron, your 8-iron, your 9-iron that you're mm-hmm. just hitting on a range full speed that you don't care where it lands,
Right, right. Yeah, and I think that Tony Admiral, if you went back and turned the clock back, I mean, how far back would we have to go to find a place where – maybe you didn't know the importance of that, right? So I think as coaches, we need to be paying attention, and right? That's
For sure.
You know what I mean? And like for me, I know there's, I get, of course, I get tangled up as we all do on Twitter or whatever, but you know, there's the discussion of, you know, shaping shots or hitting golf shots and that sort of thing. And, you know, I know, just throw Rick over in the pile of old school guys, right? I mean, that's kind of the lazy approach, and maybe I deserve it to some extent, but I would hit, as far as in between distances, you know, I'd hit kind of a hold fade at times. You know, if I'm in between 6 and 7, I'd hit a hold six, you know, or something. And that's a way for me to, you know, back then hit my 172 number instead of a 6 iron going 178 or something. And so, right, I used it, you know, kind of more for kind of in between shots than shaping it to a hole location and stuff. So, you know, I think that not every player needs to do that. Some of them just, hey, the bottom line, the physics say, well, just if you're going to present the same dynamic loft, you got to slow that club down somehow, you know, or, right, there's just different ways to do it. And I think that, you know, the Morikawas and the Woods might be more artistic, and then other players aren't. And, you know, but I think you're right. Training, what are we training here? I mean, the kid hits it center of face and, you know, has plenty of speed. Now, well, what else you got to work on, you know, when you're talking about a tee to green? And it's like, well, controlling distance is a big deal. That front to back dispersion matters just as much as that left to right stuff. So, anyway, so it's, you know, we all have our preferences, but I do think that I think coaches are wise enough, and I think as long as we learn from folks maybe we don't necessarily identify with as far as my people, you know, I still learn from people that, you know, we might have a disagreement on, and I think it's made me better to be that open-minded.
Yeah, agree 100%. You know, and to me, I mean, I'd love your, you know, like, I'd got a bunch of young guys like Corn Ferry, Latin Tour, Cantor. And, like, there's so many of these guys that are playing Latin and Cantor that are so good that are, you know, like, you watch them hit balls, like, they're all good nowadays, right?
Right.
Like, what do you think is the differential between those guys? I'm just curious from somebody who's made it. Like, when you watch these guys, like, what is it that, what do you think it is? It blows my mind. Because sometimes, like, I'll see a kid and I'll be like, and this guy, he's great, you know? And then, like, maybe he's struggling to make cuts in Canada or whatever. Like, I'm just curious from your perspective what you think is a differential there.
Yeah. I think when you say the differential, I think you're opening the door to multiple things there. But I hate to, it's not dismissive, but I'd say it depends, right? It depends on the player. Some just don't seem to have the knack to score well, you know, and yet you'll see them have, you know, exhibit all the shots, you know, as you're spending time with them. You know, they stand around that short game area and looks like they got all the shots, but then they're not recovering well when they miss a green and or whatever, putting. And, you know, I'm sort of I'm not trying to be controversial, but I absolutely hate the manager expectations statement. You know, it's like, you know, great players, they're expecting to hit a good golf shot that's in there, well within their standard deviation. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so,
Sure.
I hate, like, you know, man, I want you seeing the shot coming off the way you expect it. I want you to feel it. And that's kind of a weird, you know, kind of out there thing. But, you know, Tony, right now, if you say high draw at a back left pin, I mean, I literally feel that in my body, or my brain does anyway, right? So I think sometimes, you know, we're into this, you know, kind of, I probably spent the last 3 or 4 years spending most of my kind of personal growth, professional growth time, you know, looking at number one, studying how do people learn. I realized I should have known that a hell of a long time ago. And then how do people perform, which then gets me into the kind of the space now, which is real popular, kind of the neuroscience and that. And got a relationship with Rick Sessinghouse and been through his program and just, you know, and
right.
Then exploring other things. And just because that's a big piece. And I know it's not new to, you know, tour players or young players coming up, but there is that intangible. And but I would say that, you know, there's a confidence stuff, you know, you've seen it, right? You've had players where all of a sudden they break through and have a good week, and now they believe in themselves, right? So it's tough for you or I to manufacture that for them. But it's a crowded superhighway, right? And it's at rush hour. Mm-hmm. There's just all these cars that are ready to get going, but there's just too much traffic, and that's not a problem that's going to go away, right? It's just the level of play is so high, the differences are so small. But I would say that, certainly not anybody you're coaching, but I am surprised, and I'd even say shocked, at how many players that have invested a lot of time and money, or parents that have done that, and they've never had coaching that, you know, talks about how do you score, how do you get it done, what do you do in the tournament. And you know, I know, you know, most you know, that's not rare and unusual, but it's a little bit surprising to me that somebody can get so far along and that's so grossly underdeveloped. You know, they're doing speed training, and they've you know, been personally, you know, custom fit clubs. They've done everything other than that. And it might be this, that not many of us coaches are presenting ourselves that way. Or, you know, at times I'm a little surprised at how, you know, folks are running to somebody that, hey, this guy or this gal really, you know, gets a swing looking perfect. And yet, you know, there may be, you know, up in my area, of course, I think I've got a pretty decent resume, but, you know, I got Jeff Costin, who played a little bit on tour and is a really good player. And, you know, he's been coaching for a long time, but, you know, I'm not trying to dismiss those that didn't have a playing background, but if they haven't, I would think they need to be listening to some of the people that they shun. You know, I'm not vindictive, but I feel like sometimes I get dismissed.
I agree with that.
You know, former players, like, there's nothing to learn from them. They're not coaches. They just played. And it's like, well, some of us are now, you know, in coaching and have recognized where we lacked, right? Which might have been some of the technical stuff that others have been trained in. And I think if all of us just continue to pursue knowledge more broadly, that I think that our players are going to get better. But the problem, Tony, is then every player gets better. And it doesn't fix the struggle of your guy in Canada trying to find his way, right? It's just he's got more good players to compete with. So I think I'm on record as saying that I think professional golf, and I think the PGA Tour, because of the hold they have on it, needs to do more financially at those levels, because it takes years now. It takes years now for players to get through the system, and you know, a lot of young people I know just simply can't afford it, and it's just too many years. In my day, it was one Q school. It was, you know, three stages, and if you make it through, you're on the PGA Tour. So I know that doesn't necessarily weed out the best players, but it took, somebody had to have 15 grand in the bank to do the process. And now you probably need 3 years of funding, right, to get through the whole thing.
Right,
no doubt. Uh-huh. So, I mean, I know that at the end, the players that get out there are, you know, super good, right? But that process will burn them up, and it's discouraging for guys. So I think it's very important that they figure out a way to stay encouraged, feel like they're getting better, and missing cuts is rough. it's a big knock. Yeah.
Well, you know, we were talking, and I flash back to where you started with, you know, where you didn't have necessarily practice, so you played golf all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that's really important. And I think now we have a lot of these kids we have kids that have their own TrackMan.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And they have their own, you know, their own quads, and they've got simulators in their house, and, or they go to these ranges and all, that's all they do. Like, it seems to me that one of the things that's missing is that they would be further along as a player if they just went and played golf more.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You win for the day, Tony. That's probably the most important thing. And, you know, it's obviously something that I told the story of kind of how I learned to play, but I couldn't agree with you more. And I know, you know, maybe coming out of the pandemic with, you know, courses that are jam packed has made it more difficult. But when I think it was 2016, I had a family come to me, and they, for coaching for their kid, and you know, kind of identified kind of what their budget, what we were working with. And I literally told them, I said, if that's what you can afford, for the development of your kid, I'd say spend it on their golf. You know what I mean? Like they're, yeah. they're literally not going to become a good player if they can't play golf. I said, you know, right. I think my coaching is a value, but if you had to choose one or the other, they're going to figure a lot of stuff out on their own if they can play a ton of golf. And I think it's still relevant today, Tony. I mean, you would know better than me, but if we surveyed, you know, tour players, you know, and let's say PGA Tour, you can involve Corn Ferry too, but just say, hey, what was your experience growing up? What, you know, well, they had access to golf, you know, whether it's, mm-hmm. you know, family were members at private clubs or there's a course in the area that worked out a deal. But I just don't think we're going to have elite players coming out of a studio, you know, and I mean, there's things you can learn in there, but I don't have the answer for course, you know, access. Youth on Course is a cool program we got out here, but I mean, it needs to be like, if that kid wants to play every damn day of the week, you know, you got to figure out a way to make it happen. And, you know, I just don't think you're going to be a, you know, world-class player without playing a lot of golf.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head, and I think that that's one of the, you know, I think that's how most of the best players in the world that I've been around, I mean, that's, they just spend lots of time playing golf, and still to this day, even, you yeah. know, more of that than, I mean, they'll work on the range and get, mm-hmm. I worked with Lucas Glover for 5 years or so, and we would work some on the range and hit balls at his home, but then we would always just jump in a cart and go out and hit shots on the golf course. You know, yeah. you can only hit balls for so long. Yeah. You know, and I just think that's a valuable way to, I also think it's valuable as a teacher to watch what they really do on the golf course. Because it's way different sometimes than the crap yeah. we see on the range, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And there's a little bit, you know, we can, you know, there's ways that coaches can get information about what happens on the golf course through, you know, apps and, you know, that sort of thing, mm-hmm. data and analytics and all that. And, so that's all helpful, because I don't think any of us can make a living spending all our time on the golf course with one or two clients. And so, you know, that stuff's great, and hopefully that continues to improve. But, you've got to be aware of, you know, what they do on the course, see it in action. You know, I take time, and you know, I'm going to be here another week and a half driving halfway across the state to watch a few of my juniors playing a tournament, right? And I haven't monetized that much. I just kind of build it in. That's something I do. You know, it's part of the deal.
Yeah, I think that, you know, same here. I think you just do it because you care.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And then, but I would say that back to tour players, as far as playing, it's like, I know for me, it's, you know, on tour as a single guy, then get married, and Terry and I travel together, having a good old time, and then the kiddos start entering the world, and we're dragging strollers and everything else around, and then the kids hit school age and mom and the kids stay home. And so then now I'm, you know, certainly not happy on the road as much as I used to be, because everything I know and love is back home. But when I get home, I try to make up for it, right? Time with the kids and whatever. So all of a sudden now I'm thinking, hey, I'm prepared, because I went out and hit balls and played four holes, you know, instead of playing 18 with my buddies, and all of a sudden, right? So I'm kind of atrophying my playing skills, right? Because I'm trying to get a practice day in 3 or 4 hours instead of, you know, 7 or 8. So anyway, it's right. The importance of playing is there. And I think that I became disinterested later in my career for a number of reasons. And so the players that maintain the passion to play, you know that's a good thing. You know, keep it alive, keep the love alive. I don't know. Scotty Scheffler has had however 18 month run and whatever, and I think was kind of what he cares about. He probably could retire already. So, you know, I'm a little worried about how long these great players are going to want to keep going, right?
Because it's like, I agree.
It ain't going to be a financial decision, right? It's going to be kind of whatever. So, but anyway, that would open up the door for one of these young guys you're talking about that are trying to get out there.
Rick, this has been awesome. One, thanks for taking the time. I know you're busy. Two, I love following you on Twitter, and I've loved getting to listen to your insights. Hopefully we can do this again. Hopefully our paths cross. I'd love to have you come out and hang out with our juniors sometime, or maybe do something, man. It's been fun talking to you, and I've learned a lot from reading you and listening to you, and hopefully we can do it again.
Well, that goes both ways, Tony. Yeah, hopefully we cross paths cross soon, and thanks for having me on.
I hope you enjoyed this edition of The Tour Coach and this conversation that we brought to you about playing, learning, and teaching the game of golf. We'll be back next week with another edition of The Tour Coach. In between now and next week, make sure you follow us on our social channels. You can always find me at The Dew Sweeper on Instagram, or go to our YouTube page where you'll see a scene and a video from my teachings daily on our YouTube channel. You can find that by looking up Tony Ruggiero and The Dew Sweepers on YouTube. Until then, make sure you follow and check out everything Tour Coach and all our sponsors, Srixon Cleveland Golf, Bushnell, Vineyard Vines, and Buick GMC. I'll be back next week to help all of us appreciate, learn, and enjoy the game of golf.